So friends, we continue and almost conclude our tapestry series today. And there's an interesting connection between the 10th tapestry that we celebrated last week, Pope John the 23rd, and our 11th tapestry figure, which we'll celebrate today, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. It was John the 23rd that presided over Elizabeth Ann Seton's beatification. It was about 12 years later, in 1975, that Paul VI would preside over her canonization. But at her beatification, John the 23rd said these words about Elizabeth. In a house that was very small, but with ample space for love, Mother Seton sowed a seed in America, which by divine grace grew into a large tree. In a house that was very small, but with ample space for love, Mother Seton sowed a seed in America, which by divine grace grew into a large tree. John the 23rd is drawing on this small house in Emmitsburg, Maryland, where Elizabeth Ann Seton founded a school, a free school for all girls, which then would later blossom out basically to found Catholic education in this country. And it was this little house. In fact, somebody told me as we walked in today that they were at the house in Emmitsburg visiting. That from this little house committed to the education of the young, this incredible order, the Sisters of Charity, spring up to educate young people and to build hospitals and schools and orphanages throughout the country. She spread a seed in that little house, right, that would blossom into an incredible tree for all of those who have been impacted by her ministry. So who was Elizabeth Ann Seton? She was born Elizabeth Bailey in 1774, 3 years before the Declaration of Independence, in New York City, to a very wealthy couple. Her father was a very prominent surgeon in New York City. Her mother died at the age of 3. And so her father married again, and her father had 5 children with Elizabeth's stepmother. Unfortunately, Elizabeth's stepmother did not see Elizabeth as really a part of the family, since she was not biological daughter of her and William. And so her stepmom kind of pushed her to the side. And that little rejection early in life will maybe strengthen her for all of the rejection that she later got as she embarked on her incredible mission in the church. She was raised not Catholic. I'd have to think about this. Other than Gandhi, I think she's the only of our tapestry figures that was not raised a Catholic. She was raised an Episcopalian, which made sense. Many of the, of course, the settlers from England in the early Americas were either Episcopalian or rebels against Anglicanism, such as the Puritans. So she was raised in an Episcopalian house, and she was married at the age of 19 to a wealthy businessman, William Seton, who was 23 at the time. She speaks of her early marriage in glowing terms. They had 5 children. She said once in a letter that her first 5 years of marriage were as close to heaven as she could ever imagine life being. And I know that all of the spouses here would say the exact same thing, right, about their early years of marriage. So they had 5 children, and so life was going sort of according to plan, really beautiful. And then just disaster after disaster hit her life. First thing that happened is William's father died, and so they decided to take in William's 7 stepbrothers and sisters. So they're now raising 12. William, Elizabeth's husband, had taken over his father's business as well as the business that he had started himself. And a few years later, both of their businesses tanked. And Elizabeth's husband, William, had to file for bankruptcy for both. And then Elizabeth's husband, William, came down with a deadly case of tuberculosis. And because they had means, the doctor said, you can go to a specialist in Italy. And so Elizabeth took one of her daughters and her husband on this treacherous voyage across the Atlantic to seek medical help for her husband in Italy. When they got to port, they would not let them go through because they thought they were carrying some kind of contaminated disease from the States. And so her husband died at port. She's left then in Italy with one of her daughters and the other 11 that they're raising back home in New York City. She was taken in for a time, just a period of grief, and to kind of get her bearings by the Italian family that was her husband's business partner. And it was there that she was introduced to Catholicism for the first time by this Italian family who lived a very beautiful and simple form of Catholicism, and she was drawn to it. And so when she returned back to New York City, she started up instruction in the Catholic faith, and within a few years was confirmed by none other than Bishop John Carroll, who was the first bishop in the United States, and at that time the only bishop in the United States. The whole known lands of America were under one diocese. So John Carroll confirmed her. She was looking for work to provide for her kids, and so the Sulpician fathers, who were founding the first Catholic seminary in the United States in Emmitsburg, Maryland, which is known as Mount St. Mary's Seminary of the East. And I emphasize this because I went to Mount St. Mary's Seminary of the West, and we don't like the people from Mount St. Mary's Seminary of the East. But they are the first seminary in the U.S. We were the third. Cincinnati, Mount St. Mary's was the third seminary in the U.S. But the Sulpicians said, okay, we don't want to just build a seminary. We want to start a school for girls. And so they invite Elizabeth Ann Seton to come to Emmitsburg and to build a free school for the education of young girls. From that little house, it exploded. They start a parochial Catholic school. Then John Carroll says, hey, you need to start a religious order that's dedicated to the education of young people. And she said, well, I have five kids. Like most nuns, you know, don't have five kids. We have a few sisters here with us. Most of them don't have five children. And so she got sort of a dispensation to start the order and get it going and get other sisters in the field and so on, and then return to her life as a mother. In the decades that followed, the Sisters of Charity spread and built orphanages and schools and hospitals all over. You may know of them if you are familiar with Cincinnati. They have a big house in Cincinnati. My cousins who are in Cincinnati that are girls all go to Seton High School, which is, of course, an all-girls school named after Elizabeth Ann Seton. She died in 1821 at the age of 46. You think, that's a busy life for 46 years. She was canonized, as I mentioned, in 1975 by Pope Paul VI. What do we learn from her for our own lives? The first thing I think we learn is her incredible sense of abandonment and surrender to God's will and trust in God's purposes. In her journal, she simply calls God's will, with a capital W, to contrast it with her strong will. And what Elizabeth understood so well is that God works within the circumstances that life throws at you. See, I think for a lot of us, we imagine what life should be, right? And there's a role for that, right? There's a purpose for dreaming and so on. Imagine what life should be, and when it doesn't go like that, we don't look for God. We say, this isn't how my life's supposed to be. This is not how my marriage is supposed to be. This is not how I had dreamed my marriage to be. And you can imagine it in her life, that she has five kids and a happy marriage, and she's thinking, this is great. This is going to be the rest of my life. And then you're like, you have to have the conversation about taking seven in. And that couldn't have been an easy conversation. Because I remember the conversation at my house when my mom came home and said, we're adopting twins, when I was 16 and when they were 48 and 47. And I can tell you that was not a fun conversation for anyone in the family. But to take in seven and then to trust God to go on this treacherous voyage to care for your husband, and then to come back after being separated from your kids and all you want to do is mother them, and the church says, hey, we're discerning that you should start this order. God's calling you to start this order. And she's like, no. No. But she always saw God's will sort of thrown at her that she takes on the circumstances of life and asks God to bless those, not some fantasy land about what life should be in a perfect world, which doesn't exist, but life as it is, life as it presents itself, with all of the messiness of that, to find God in that, and to surrender to God in that, is one of her great gifts. The second thing I think Elizabeth Ann Seton teaches us is that rejection is a part of life, and more specifically, a part of the Christian life. So I think we all know that rejection is a part of life in general. That psychologically, we need to experience some degree, right, within reason, of rejection in order to experience at an early age rising above it, right? To experience at an early age transcending the obstacles in our way. Elizabeth experienced rejection a ton in her life. Not only was she rejected by her stepmother at a young age, but once she started on this mission of schoolwork, she was rejected, as you can imagine, by the church. So a lot of priests thought, who in the heck is this woman? She has no education, formal education. She is underqualified. She's way in over her head. Who the heck is she to start this girls' school? So there were lots of people counseling Bishop Carroll. This is too much for her. The other rejection came when people found out she was Catholic. Because as you may know from early America, there was this great suspicion of Catholics, that we had dual loyalty, that it was, you couldn't be a patriot to America if you had first allegiance to the Pope. So there was this incredible suspicion throughout much of church history that a true Catholic could not be a true American. And so there's stories of when some of the families in the schools that she started found out she had converted to Catholicism, they pulled their kids right out and said, we are not having our kids indoctrinated by Catholicism. And so throughout her early life, she experienced opposition, she experienced rejection, but she just kept pushing through it. She said, I think this is God's will. I'm going to do it. I'm going to transcend it. I'm going to rise above it. Right? And Christ constantly tells us that if we're speaking truth to the world, that occasionally we are going to be opposed. It doesn't mean we go searching it out at every moment. Like we strive to be antagonistic at every moment. But it does mean that occasionally we're going to have to take on the prophetic spokespiece of Jesus, which means to speak truth in a situation, and that means that there may be opposition. We may feel called to do something for which we're opposed on. And Elizabeth Ann Seton tells us that's not necessarily a sign that we're not called to still do it. The last thing we learn from Elizabeth Ann Seton, I would say, is that we live on in the legacy of love and in the relationships that we cultivated here on earth. That the legacy that Mother Seton has left behind are all the children that her schools and her orphanages and her hospitals have cared for in the over 200 years of their ministry. There's a movie about Elizabeth Ann Seton called A Time for Miracles. I would not recommend it. It is a terrible movie. I'm sorry to say that, and I hope the producer is not here or something like that. So I wouldn't recommend it. But the premise of it, which I actually don't know if it's even true, I didn't fact check this, but the premise of the movie is that they're having the debate in the Vatican in the 60s and 70s over canonizing. And of course, you know that a certain amount of approved miracles are needed. And they're having this debate at the Vatican, and the devil's advocate, which is an actual position in the Vatican, who argues against the saint. So it's like, if I were up for canonization, which will never happen, okay? But if I were up, there would be someone assigned to find every bad thing that I ever did and said, right? That's a great position. I would love to have that position. So the devil's advocate, so they're like prosecuting attorney, and then you have another cardinal who's a defense attorney, right? And so they're having this battle about whether she should be canonized. And at one point, the defense attorney says, enough with the fourth miracle that's needed. Let me tell you what her miracle is. Her miracle is every child who has received an education because of the school that the Sisters of Charity have founded. Her miracle is every child who received a home after their parents had abandoned them because of an orphanage that the Sisters of Charity had founded. Her miracle is every child that's been cured because of a hospital that the Sisters of Charity have founded. And of course, in dramatic fashion in the movie, which is not very dramatic because it's a bad movie, this resolves the question. That her miracle is the legacy of kids receiving an education and health because of the small house that started at a girls' school that blossomed into a large tree. So friends, we will, at our death, we will be remembered for the legacy of love that we left behind. Right? We will not take anything with us. The only thing we'll take with us is whether there's more love in the world because we lived in it, because we existed. Is there more love, more unity, more healing in the world, or not? And Elizabeth Ann Seton teaches us that that's the legacy that we are called to. So friends, we have this incredible saint in our midst, the first native-born American to ever be canonized, an incredible woman of faith who teaches us so much about surrendering to the will of God, being strong in the face of opposition and resistance, and letting, cultivating relationships of love and healing and of unity. And so these words that John the 23rd spoke at her beatification ring true. In a house that was very small, but with ample space for love, she sowed a seed in America, which by divine grace grew into a large tree. From this small house of worship, may we sow the seeds of God's love and grace on this campus and beyond. St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, pray for us.